There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan.
My brother from another mother.
On FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here. And it's easy to get in touch with the show. 251-343-0106 for a call or a text. Same number, 251-343-0106. In addition, you can always leave us a talkback message using the FM Talk 106.5 app when you're on the front page or landing page, whatever. The first thing that opens up there, at the bottom, you'll see a microphone icon. If you'll press that, lets you record the message, emails it to the show, and I can play it back here on the air. So, different ways to get in touch with the show. Now, let me give you a heads up, too. It's a Monday, and Monday's a day when people, I think, get things started for the week. It's a Monday. Let's get these things done. If you have junk, you've been looking at the junk, you've been walking around the junk, you've been having notices from friends and family about the junk, time to get rid of it. I got a guy who's been doing it for 18 plus years in Mobile and Baldwin County. That's my buddy Trey with 1-800-GOT-JUNK. And it is that easy. Use them personally, use them with this radio station. They make good old-fashioned appointments, too. You know, nobody wants to have set an appointment where they say, well, you have to be out of work all day, whatever day, waiting on somebody to come by. Well, that's not the way it works with 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Their name is the number, so when you call them or you go to the website, 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com, they'll find the day that works for you, the time that works for you, and they set the appointment. All you got to do then, they show up, you just point at the junk you want gone, quote your price right there on the spot, you say yes, they get to work, and it's done then. So junk inside the house, outside the house, storage unit, office, wherever. You got junk, you need it gone, you need my friend Trey with 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Got junk. All right, and good to see this man back in studio, and a lot to talk about with the CEO, president, and Lord Master Commander of the Mobile Chamber of Commerce, and former congressman here in the old design of AO1, Bradley Byrne. Good to see you.
Good to see you, Sean. Good to be back.
Hey, you just got back on the show. Just got back in the States.
Right.
You were you were traveling. TSA. Stories, anything?
No. We had no problems at all here in Mobile with TSA. Came in to Atlanta from a foreign country Saturday afternoon, got through customs very easily, got through the TSA, which because you have to redo it when you get into the country, got through TSA in Atlanta without any problems. So I was prepared for the worst, and it didn't happen.
Well, good. So you were there are some people. I know Obama traveled some and didn't have too many problems, but then, of course, you look around at what makes news, and people are camped out in a TSA line.
Well, I've heard some horror stories about LaGuardia, JFK, Houston, New Orleans. And I heard horror stories about Atlanta. But when we went through there Saturday, we didn't have any problems.
Because you had to re-clear it, like you said, we're coming in. Because a lot of people out of here said, I heard Atlanta's a problem. I said, well, it's not a problem for you. If you clear TSA here, you don't have to clear TSA in Atlanta and go through. But you did coming back in. So let's put your congressman's hat back on here.
Yeah.
This debate going on right now over the DHS funding with, I guess, Senate shut down, the more austere body, they're going for spring break.
Right. So the proposal I heard that they're dealing with today is that they're going to put a 3 years worth of funding for DHS in a reconciliation bill, which only requires majority vote in the Senate. Now, why they didn't come up with that long before now, I don't know, but that would work. And I think that's probably their best chance of getting something through. What the Senate did Friday was tell the Democrats, okay, we're just going to accept what you want. And they knew that wasn't going to pass in the House.
Right.
I mean, you know, the House is not going to do that. And so Mike Johnson, you know, formally said, we're not going to even take that up. And they passed their own version, which is a 60-day CR. And that's not going to pass in the Senate. But a reconciliation bill that carries out funding for 3 years, I can see that passing with a majority vote in the Senate, and I can see it passing in the House.
So you think what happened in the preceding week or 10 days, really more than that, was just kind of to set up this, to say, well, we've now exhausted these other options. Yeah. Our only option's a CR.
Yeah, see, we tried what you wanted to do,
right,
Democrats, and it didn't work. So we're going to do this other thing. Now, the Democrats aren't going to vote for the reconciliation bill. We know that. Mm-hmm. But we don't need them. We've got 53 votes in the House and Senate, and that's all we need.
You know, these things have to be done, too, because I don't have all the polling in front of me here, but I just have a sense that midterms are going to be tough in some places for Republicans.
No. This is not going to be an easy year for Republicans. We already see some of the polling to indicate that. The president's numbers have gotten worse in the last few weeks. The sort of generic vote on how Democrats, Republicans, that's gotten worse for Republicans. Now, there's plenty of time for us to make up for that. So you got 6 months, 7 months. We'll see if we can make that up.
Okay. Also, while I got you in that hat, and I've always reached out to you on this on realpolitik and foreign affairs. You know, I've talked a lot about those. Situation with Iran.
Yeah.
That has, they just finished up a presser here. The latest there and the questions about ground troops. But let's back it up. First series of strikes. Should we take out the nukes? Then we got to come back and take out the nukes. Where do you sit on this? What should we? And obviously, you can't tell us the things you know from back in the day, but the things you're allowed to talk about. What do we need to know?
Well, the first thing we need to know is that the war didn't start in February. The war started in 1979. They have awakened every day since then, saying "Death to America." They have funneled directly and indirectly all sorts of money and equipment to try to hurt American soldiers on the battlefield. So this is not something that we started. This is something that they started and have continued. The president saw, I'm sure, classified information that I don't get to see at this point in time, and he decided this was the moment to strike, to try to keep them from getting the ability to deliver a long-range ballistic missile to the mainland of the United States. So he struck along with Israelis, and it's hard to tell exactly how far they were able to penetrate, but they have inflicted some pretty severe damage on the Iranians. Now, the Iranians are reacting by saying, okay, we'll just shut off the Strait of Hormuz and cut off the flow of 20% of the world's oil supply.
Which it should be expected. They're going to meet us mano a mano. So, I mean, that's the way they can.
They did the same thing in 1986.
Yes.
The difference is.
And I had Admiral Kemp Davis sat in that chair the other day, and he told me the same thing. He said, I was deployed there. He said, we dealt with this.
The problem, there are two differences, and he may have told you this. One is missile technology has vastly improved.
They were shooting Scuds back then, he said.
Yeah, I mean, their missile capability is much greater than that. But the second is, drones have changed war.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one guy can sit out there in a field and start launching drones, and, you know, you launch 20, two or three get through. Okay, I've inflicted damage with two or three of my 20 drones.
That cost no more than $30,000 each versus $1.4 for a Tomahawk. You know.
So it's hard to defend against that many small objects.
Mm-hmm.
You can defend against a lot of them, but if one of them gets through, they can inflict damage, and they have.
So going forward here, you find a way to reopen straight, and you just leave Iran as a museum piece? I mean, because I am, you know, my non-isolationist butt is, you know, always looking for a way for not getting ourselves in a further war. If they want to hate America but do it within the confines of their borders and not fund terrorists, I don't care. Hate America on your own time, in your own country limits, that's fine.
Yeah, I mean, they're a terrible group of people, the regime in Iran. They're awful. But it's not, in my view, it's not the interest of the United States to expend the lives and the fortune that it would take to oust that regime. I hate it for the Iranian people, but it's just not in our interest to do that. Let's achieve our military objectives and get the heck out.
What is it, you got to think about it as we're switching to Chambers' hat, and a lot of what happens here is dependent on what happens with the port. We're not getting, it's not like the oil that's being stopped at the Strait is directly on its way here, but it affects the bigger markets. And with that, I got to imagine, we all talk about the price of the pump for our cars and 18-wheelers hauling stuff all around the country, but those, you know, the ships don't run on sunshine and good feelings either.
No.
So every unit, even if it's not you know, the oil that's coming here, but the widget that's coming from somewhere here has got to be priced up.
It's got to be fueled by diesel in a tanker.
Yeah.
And or a freighter or in a container ship. And so it's going to have some impact. It's too early to know exactly how much impact it's going to have right now. But that price of something like that that goes up, it gets trickled downstream. Mm-hmm. So we should expect to see that at some point. So far, I haven't heard anything from the port to indicate that it's decreased their volume of traffic.
Right.
But it's probably too soon to know that.
Because, yeah, that widget that comes from wherever. And, okay, here it comes in the Port of Mobile or Port of Alabama, whatever we're supposed to call it now, Port of Mobile, because I'm a homer. it comes in. We've got the increased price of that widget from that ship burned bringing it in. Now we're putting it on an 18-wheeler. Who's burning diesel that's over five-something a gallon, and then it's going from there to wherever. That's just basic economics. Things are going to cost more.
That, and the next time you sit down and carve into a steak or or eat a thing of corn, it takes fertilizer to grow all that. That fertilizer has petrochemicals in it, so all that's going to go up. So it's going to have an inflationary effect on the American economy. There's no question about it.
Yeah, the fertilizer thing, believe me, it's in the ag world, we talk about it. I mean, it's been an issue for a long time, but we're like another increase on this stuff.
I think we should see that coming.
Let's talk about this as we go to the break and come back and talk more of it. But you had a job fair, because I want to start off with my lament about – I tell the story all the time that you sat in here a year or two ago when you first told me, you said, I had a little bit of a come apart. You said, we're bringing people in from elsewhere to fill jobs here in Mobile because the people, we didn't have the people here filling the jobs, right? Remember that discussion?
Right, sure do.
So what happened the other day? You have a jobs fair.
So we had a jobs fair in conjunction with the Mobile County Public School System. We had 3,000 seniors turn out. There were, I think, 80-some-odd employers there. The students had been told for the 2 or 3 weeks previous to that in their classes, here's who's going to be there, here's what they do, here's the type of skills you would have, and here's what they pay. So when the students walked in the door, they knew, here's who I want to go talk to, whatever field they wanted to go into. And so that gives them an opportunity to hear beforehand, what are my opportunities out there, what can I do, what am I interested in, and then it puts them directly in touch with the employer. Now, I haven't gotten the reports from this year's, but last year, some of those kids walked out the door with jobs because we need them. And we much rather, they're the low-hanging fruit, we much rather get them jobs.
Yeah.
It's much more expensive to bring somebody in from outside of Mobile. We'd rather get them jobs. That's the goal.
And it's better for all of us in Mobile.
Oh, yeah.
Because more people employed, the money all stays here. I mean, they make the money here, they spend the money here.
Well, if I grew up in a household that's never made more than $30,000 or $35,000 a year, and I walk all across the stage as a high school senior and get a job paying $60,000 a year, $65,000 a year, that changes your life.
Yes. Oh, it's absolutely life-changing. And the ability to increase that salary going forward is significant. And that's one of the things, maybe it's getting through, you know, there's the idea of, okay, fulfill your life goal and all that. Okay, that's fine. But if you're talking to 17-year-old mushheads like I was, come in and just tell me how much money I can make doing something.
Well, enough money to make payment on a nice truck.
Right. The way I said, y'all want a new truck? You want to get a boat? You want to be able to go on the vacation? This is happening.
The difference between when you and I had that first conversation and now is we figured out how to get the information out there, not just to the students, but to their teachers, to the guidance counselors, to principals, to mom and dad.
Yeah.
And now that we figure that out, the word's getting around, we're getting a lot more interest from our local people, and that's what we wanted.
I do like it that you lead into this. You start telling them beforehand, here's who's going to be there, so somebody can sit and go, okay, that's an industry, that's a business I'd work in. And then you tell them the thing. This is how much money. Right, you're not shying away from the, here it is, here's what you can make.
And we had people there that say, all right, here's my 6-week program that'll get you prepared for that job.
Yes.
So they sign up for the job, and they sign up for the training they got to have before they actually take the job, and they walk out the door, and they've got their life figured out for them. Nobody figured out my life for me when I was that age.
No, me neither. And there wasn't well, you can go out and find your own way in the world.
No.
Well, this is like, hey, do this and this and this and make 60 starting out.
Here's your choice. Which course do you want in your menu? Pick it.
Like it. Coming right back with CEO of the Mobile Chamber, Bradley Byrne, our guest.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 123, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. 251-343-0106 gets you through on a call or the text. Quickly here, we transition from realpolitik to vehicles for all of us right here at home. It's my man who's, I'm sure, got a good story to tell us on inventory, David McCrary at LCM. What's it looking like on the lot today?
Good. We have got a great inventory today. We've got a truck on its way now. Should be here in the next hour or so, and we're buying some more right now online. So we got six of everything, it seems like. Anything you're looking for. Small cars, got large sedans, small SUVs. We got a Yukon XL, full-size trucks, regular cab trucks. I mean, anything you want.
And also, just so y'all know, I mean, David does his research on these vehicles before they show up, but as a customer of yours and, you know, buying and selling, you let somebody grab it. If I say I want to go take it to my mechanic, you're cool with that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we kind of encourage it. Mm-hmm. It's just, we everything we do goes through an inspection from a third party twice before it gets here. And then if we have anything that we need to do to it, we take care of it. But I mean, people are looking at it. I mean, stuff happens, you know? I mean, we miss stuff just like anybody else. So we'd love for another, just to give you the peace of mind.
Okay. So, I mean, this is what I'm talking about. This is why I buy my vehicles from LCM. So y'all do the same. See them on the web. Your website's great, the newly revamped website.
Yeah, the website's turned out really good. And, you know, Sean, we talked a while back about the scan codes and everything on the car windows.
Mm-hmm.
We've got all that done now. James is working on it today. Got a couple of them done, and, man, they look good. So if you come out on the lot after hours, or even if we're here, you can take your phone, scan the QR code on the side of the car, and on the door glass, and it'll take you straight to the website where that vehicle is at on our website. You can pull the Carfax from there, and it'll tell you all the history, everything you want to see right there. If for some reason we're not out there with you, you can do your own deal here.
You're high-tech, brother. Tell them how to find you in person to do that scanning.
We are at Highway 90 and Plantation in Theodore. It's 1 mile south of I-10, exit 15A. If you want to give us a call, 251-375-0068. Like you said, the website, lcmmotorcars.com, a great website. But with these little scan tools, it's actually more fun in person looking at cars than it is online. So if you want to come out here and look at them in person, even if we're not here, you're welcome to, and you can figure out everything it is just by that one little tool we put out there for you.
I like it. David, appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
Thanks. Have a good day.
All right. There he goes. And, yeah, y'all go scan or see those vehicles in person. Continue our conversation with CEO of the Mobile Chamber, also back when AL1 looked like it was supposed to, Congressman Bradley Byrne.
Good to be back.
Man, don't get me started on the drawing.
It hurts my blood pressure when I get to talk about it.
Yeah, you know, we talked about cost. We talked about what it means to all of us here. Brandon says, he's with the trucking company in Mobile. We pull containers out of the port. Okay. It cost $160 more per trip to Montgomery today than it did 3 weeks ago.
Wow.
We do 50 to 60 a week.
Wow. Well, somebody's got to
pay for that.
There's
some real numbers. It costs $160 more per trip.
Yeah. Well, that's to get real world information like that's very helpful. Somebody's got to pay for that. It just doesn't float out there in the ether.
Yeah, exactly. And this is, I mean, you go, well, you know, well, Strait of Hormuz, well, we don't have anything, you know, there's nothing. I mean, we're dealing with, you know, stuff coming through the Panama Canal, different regional. But the stuff that makes the ships go move is costing more, and it costs more in the trucks.
Well, oil's sold on a worldwide market. We've got plenty of oil in here.
Yes.
But it goes in a worldwide market. And so what happens over there affects the price of stuff over here, and we don't have any choice about that.
Got that right. All right. I'd love to see the stats when they come back from this latest jobs fair, but we're talking. I do like the fact that y'all are telling folks, here's how much you get. Because, I mean, I remember being 17. I mean, that would have been appealing to me. Instead of just saying, well, here's a way you can express your desire to go for whatever. Just tell me, here's a job. Right. I could do that job for that much money. Yes.
Well, we figured that out early on. But we couldn't just tell the students. We had to tell their teachers and the principals and the people that run their CTE programs and mom and dad. And now the information's out there pretty well. Now, we got to repeat it every year. They're going to be wrong. Mm-hmm. But the information's out there. The kids in school are hearing from some of their older friends who are out there working and making this money, and they're saying, this is what I want to do.
Yeah.
So we're beginning to get a lot of those kids into this job system.
So, and that transition, that matriculation, they graduate, you said a six-week?
To become a welder, you have a six-week course.
Six-week course. And then in a lot of these cases, there's a job going, hey, you walk in first day, welcome.
Well, the press conference we had this morning was with the $30 million that the Navy gave to some community colleges down here. You know, we've got jobs for them. If they'll learn how to be a ship fitter or a pipe fitter or a welder, we have jobs that are only increasing.
Mm-hmm.
So our hope is over the next several years is that we can begin to capture more and more of our local people into these jobs because we're going to need them.
This is what Bradley just mentioned here. So the Navy investing $30 million into Alabama Community College System to increase the production of submarines. So not only are you in a job, you know, with a skill, but it's, I mean, imagine the tolerances on a submarine. If you can do that for a living, there's going to be jobs for you for a long time.
If your bolt isn't torqued down to the right size or right amount, then somebody could be hurt. A whole bunch of somebody could be hurt.
Right. So you get that skill set going forward. We'll talk more about that. We're coming right back. We'll take your questions as well. Got them coming in on the text line at 251-343-0106. News coming up next.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 135 FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along and good to see this man in studio. Trying to get it more regular here in 2026 because I get to ask him about jobs in Mobile and also get to ask him about things a world away and half a world away in politics. Congressman for AL1 back when it was drawn the right way and CEO and president of the Mobile Chamber, Bradley Byrne. This, a lot of text coming in here. Here's what we're talking about. So this texter says, my friend's, he says his son's 19 years old. Makes $30 an hour at Airbus. He went through their training program. $30 an hour.
Yeah.
And you said that's also entry level.
That's entry level. So over the course of that young man's career, he'll be making a multiple of that because he's that valuable as he gains experience. And remember, when you're putting together an airplane, it's got to be just right, just like a submarine, because, you know, we've got some examples of where they didn't get it right.
Yes.
And whole window things get blown out, and you can't afford that. So the quality of the workers that we're now producing in a lot of different fields, not just aviation and shipbuilding, is very high, which proves that our people can do it. And the word is out there around the world that we have the workforce to do these kind of jobs.
Yeah, they attract. Like once you get it, not just the whale and the fish idea, you get a big one, then you got the subcontractors to them. But it seems to be looking at it from the outside. Once somebody makes a decision to go there, the other companies can go, well, they already did their due diligence. I know that company.
Right.
We can build our widgets that may be different in that place, but because we know they've done the work for us.
That's why fast food restaurants are all located around one another. Somebody's done the initial market survey, and they know where to go. What's happened now is all these international companies and national companies have got us on their radar screen, and you know it's our job at the chamber to make sure we put together the best possible projection proposal to them that we can put together so that we look like we're in an attractive spot, and we're having a lot of success with that.
Yeah, so what, like, if you had to put your vision for the economic future of Mobile, just like regular people speak, you and I talk, what is that? Give me 10 years.
I mean, what sort of industry sectors?
Yeah, I mean, what just the economic future of our city with this?
Oh, I think it's in advanced manufacturing, whether it's aviation or shipbuilding or chemical or steel. And it's logistics, which is the port and warehousing and things that take stuff to and from the port. I think it's healthcare. I mean, you don't realize healthcare is an industry, but our two big healthcare systems, USA and Infirmary Health Systems, are just gigantic and growing. So I think it's that. But I think some of the new things you'll see us get into are things like drones, both sea drones and air drones. When we leave a regional airport to move our commercial traffic downtown, we've got a FAA-approved runway and tower out there. So we can attract drone companies. We can attract, on our waterfront, we can attract maritime drones, which is the future of warfare. So I think you're going to see a lot of cool things like that. The other big area that we want to jump into is biotech, biopharmaceutical. We think we've got a real niche there that we can fall into, and those are pretty high-end jobs.
And what do we have? You know, I think about the workforce, but also think about infrastructure. Makes sense for the drones. You have, Farmers Terminal. You have I-10 and 65, have the port, have the railway. What do they need? Do you know?
They need people that have, smart people, obviously, that have either an undergraduate or a graduate degree in that field. University of South Alabama has those degree programs. They turn out people every year, and every one of them leave because we don't have the jobs here for them.
So everybody goes to Atlanta or Charlotte.
I can bring a biomedical company here and say, here's all the good things we've got going here. And when they say, where we get my workers from, I can say, they're in that building right over there. Mm-hmm. Go talk to them. Because that's the most valuable thing to an industry like that, are the people with the know-how, the training, the skills, the education. And we're already producing them. We're just exporting 100% of them.
Yeah, that's why, I don't know what, but it seems like, friends and their kids, Atlanta, Charlotte. Where's your kid? Well, they're in Charlotte or they're in Atlanta or they're,
Well, we're beginning to hold on to more and more of them, and we're beginning to get some people back. So hang on. Well, I think we're going to be able to chip into that.
We'll want to say this with the mics open here. Did I seed this conversation at all and talk about putting drone manufacturing here for marine drones? Did I talk to you? We never talked about that before, have we?
No, we haven't.
Now, I've been saying this on the air for a while.
I'll tell you what happened. You may have seen this. In December, the Ukrainians announced that they disabled a Russian submarine with a sea drone.
A billion-dollar asset of the Black Sea Fleet brought down by I don't know what those things cost, but sub-50,000 probably.
And to operate next to nothing.
So I've been obsessed with the smaller drones, too. I'd like, we have the Reapers and we have all these things that are great, but I said, we're fighting against people that are using $35,000 drones. Let's make some of those, and been talking about that. And then I said the Marine. So I've been on this thing for months here. It's good. So
I think sea drones are part of our future. I really do.
Can I help as a pitch man? Because I'm fired up about this.
Well,
I'm like,
please do. please make that pitch to the Navy so they start thinking about us for those sorts of things. And I think they are. I think they really are thinking.
Well, if they're coming here and Navy's investing $30 million to figure out people to put together subs, these are subs too.
Oh yeah,
So we can do this. You mentioned farmers, but the airport. This from Bob said, can you ask Congressman Byrne if he has any info or update on the new airport?
Yeah, they're going to move the airport sometime during calendar year 2027.
Okay.
They're taking their time because if you try to force it too quickly, then you have a problem with the transition. And you can't transition during November and December because the airlines won't do it during that time. So take our time, get it done right, which we're going to do it right. And then that opens up regional as a place for us and the airport authority to market this area to people in drone world, to people in what we call maintenance, repair, and overhaul, where you fly your plane in, you do whatever.
It's been going like Berkeley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except, that company left, but we've got dozens of companies that we're talking to about coming here.
Would that be the idea? Because I walk through, the airport here in Mobile and go, what are we going to do with this space, right? Would that be pitched as offices or something like that?
What we want to do with regional is talk to MRO companies, maintenance, repair, and overhaul companies, talk to drone companies, anybody who needs an FAA-approved runway and tower.
Okay? Right.
You don't need an interstate because you're flying your stuff
in. Right.
You just need a runway and a tower. Well, we've got that.
And then I just wonder about the physical structure of the terminal as it is now. Would that be kept maybe for offices, or would that be
We've got several different ways we could refurbish that, repurpose it into a different type building. It's got a lot of promise, I think.
Okay, this one from CA said, can you ask Bradley about the hotel study teams, museum and St. Louis. I don't hotel study teams. Maybe you can give me more.
I know there have been some talk about some hotels on St. Louis Street. I don't know much more than that. We've been spending a lot of time helping Philip Burton on his project on the actual riverfront next to the convention center. Like I was over there at this press conference this morning at the Maritime Museum. And it looks like they're getting close to being finished with the repairs to Cooper Riverside Park. So that will help us kick off a river walk there, right there on our river waterfront, which will be wonderful.
That's one that I don't know if the shell is completely eroded on it for me. Talking with former Mayor Stimson when he first brought this up about it, I'm like, he and I were just having a frank conversation like I do. I said, dang it, I just don't get, to me, just Mobile guy, the dang riverfront's a riverfront. It's heavy industry, but then we had some things built. But I mean, and he was really, even back then, so positive. He's like, no, Sean, we're going to do this, that, and the other. And to watch this stuff coming over time, and to hear Mayor Chiarigotta talk about this, to deal with getting across, make Water Street more.
Right.
I have a great idea for zip lines, but nobody's listening to that. but to get people across. But people have suggested, why don't we have more, the walkway is from RSA over to, the convention center. We do more of those.
The idea is that you're tying Dolphin Street more into, which is an entertainment corridor, you're tying it more into your actual riverfront. So the idea is you've got Dolphin Street that hooks into right there at the convention center, hooks into a riverfront that will come back around to where our arena is. Maybe a little hint here, maybe we figure out a way to build a 5,000-seat soccer stadium in between.
Hmm.
So there's all sorts of opportunities down there. And Mayor Chiarigotta, I think, will be there long enough to where he can see all of this come to fruition.
Because it takes, like I said, it's an erosion over time for me because I just, you know what it is. I mean, Mobile guy, you say, well, that's what they do. That's where the heavy industry is. The entertainment's on the west side.
Right.
This idea, I'm just slowly trying to picture, and I know propose condos and hotel and stuff on there, which I don't know, when's that supposed to happen? Do we know?
Well, the Burton project on the riverfront.
Yeah, when's that supposed to start?
That's going to take a couple more years because of the engineering. You got to work with the railway, and you got to work with the highway. But it's coming along. It's a very complex project. But it will anchor that riverwalk, and we've got agreement with the state where we can actually take the riverwalk past where the cruise ship terminal is, south of that.
Go south.
Because the state now owns that for the stuff they need for the new bridge.
I'm trying to picture.
There's nothing there.
Yeah, I guess not.
That riverwalk keep going.
Okay. You mentioned train, too, for a second. So your honest reaction to the numbers coming in from Amtrak on the border crawl service. I mean, that was...
I shouldn't be because I was a supporter of it,
but yeah.
I'm surprised at how good it is. And I predicted this, so I'm going to take credit for it.
Okay.
We got a lot of traffic coming from New Orleans here. And here's how I first picked up on that. I was down at Bob Baumhauer's restaurant, Dolphins, mm-hmm. on top of the Trustmark building. And I know the people that run that restaurant for Bob. And they come up to me and say, you wouldn't believe our foot traffic on the weekends. You would not believe how many people are coming in here. They say it's making our weekends, weekend after weekend after weekend.
Yeah, so what I've talked about here on the show, because I don't have any data to read through, but mine is from street level, and they're on Dolphin Street, and a buddy of mine, if you're listening, what's up, David, proprietor of some restaurants and bar and grills downtown, and he and his people tell me the same thing. Like I said, I don't have a study in front of me. I just know. I go, hey, are there people coming? They're like, yeah, they're New Orleans people here. So,
38% of the traffic is New Orleans to Mobile. And those 38% are coming back to New Orleans saying, hey, I had a great weekend in Mobile. And we're affordable.
Mm-hmm.
We're safe. Our downtown is safe.
Yeah.
And so the word's getting back there. More and more people saying, still weekend in Mobile.
All right, we'll keep it up.
Come on the train.
Hard for me to say, we welcome you, New Orleans, to our fair city.
We do.
There we go.
It's good to have our little brother over there recognize that we're over here.
Coming right back with Bradley Burton.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. 251-343-0106. So get right back to our conversation with the CEO and president of the Mobile Chamber, also Congressman Bradley Byrne. And it's always good to have you on. Okay, I'll ask you this one because I asked some Real Politique stuff. But as an advocate for Mobile to those folks in Washington, you go back up. Obviously, you have the relationships there. Like, what are they asking? Are they asking about, hey, y'all got this for jobs or that? What do you do to advocate for us up there?
Well, we advocate for several things. Number one, we want to make sure the Navy keeps us on their radar screen for future projects. Number two, we are up there advocating for the stuff that we need to support our economic development, which could be something as far reaching as transportation, the bridge, the stuff we need for workforce training, which is what we had the announcement out this morning about. Some special projects to help with infrastructure. So we have a sort of a wide-ranging things. And then all the chamber execs up and down the Gulf Coast, we go together in September and talk about regional projects, FEMA, the fishery. So, yeah. And the congressmen and senators love the fact that we come up there with a regional approach because it makes their jobs like 1,000 times easier. So we've had a lot of success with that. I've been very pleased with the legislative session we've had this year. We've gotten one local bill through. It was very important to us to expand our ability to do a TIF. And I think we got one passing tomorrow that will expand the powers of our Industrial Development Board. So this has been a good year for us, really has.
Yeah, you mentioned the fisheries part of it and how many conversations we had when you were in office about this. Your ears might have been burning Thursday. Commissioner of DCNR, Chris Blankenship, and I were talking. We talked about the economic impact of hunting in the state. And I said, Chris, I'm still working off numbers, a sheet that when you used to come in here, we had printed off a sheet, a study done by Texas A&M. I think it was, if I remember correctly, it was $1.3 million a day in revenue to the state of Alabama for every day snapper season was open. And that's been a long time ago. So I can't imagine what it is now.
I don't know what it is, but it's big. And, you know,
It's an industry. You talk about industries and bringing jobs.
Charter boat captains, yes. People sell ice, beer, bait, you name it. It is an industry and a very important industry to us.
And it's, so keep pushing that up there to say, you know.
Yes, sir. Believe me, if they want to talk about fishery, I want to talk to them about fisheries.
Yeah, it's and the idea, I think there's a lot, listen, from when we first started talking about it to now, and being able to have the state run the allocation, I think it's great. It's way great. And our state, with involving the science here going on with Dr. Powers, University of South Alabama Marine Sciences, I mean, it's fantastic.
It's unbelievable. And look at how long our season was last year.
Yes.
I mean, it's worked.
Yes.
And it hasn't worked to the detriment of the fish population. The fish population is healthy.
Yep. It's a very good thing. And but you have to have an ambassador to go up there and tell somebody. Because if you look at like a fish stock in Alaska, you could worry about those things and the commercial harvest there and what's going on. And I guess they get the idea, in Washington that it's all the same. All the fisheries are the same. It's not.
No, they're very different. So in the first Trump administration, we brought his head of the National Marine Fisheries Service down here, took him out on Dolphin Island with the University of South Alabama folks to do their fishery around where they fished several reefs. And at the end of the day, he and I are on the bow of the boat coming back into Dolphin Island. And I said, all right, what do you think? He said, you got plenty of fish out here.
There you go.
That's, show them.
Yeah. Well, keep showing them. Keep bringing them in here and showing them. You also mentioned the bridge and the bridge project. And you and I have talked about that over the years from the federal side, getting the funding. Help me with the math here. I mean, you're doing it from the Mobile Chamber side, but where are we going to get the rest of the money?
Well, maybe it's not going to cost quite as much as we thought because we get some regulatory relief from Federal Highway Administration. So maybe we can re-engineer the project to make it cost a little less because they're not requiring us to do as much as they were originally. Maybe that's the solution here.
Okay. And I mean, that could be a reduction that brings those numbers back.
Brings the numbers within what we can afford. And you have to be realistic about what you can afford. But there are ways to build these things that aren't as expensive as they were at one point, at least, if the feds would just give us a break.
Yeah.
So that's right now. That's the ask.
It's not even brick and mortar. It's regulation.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's Sean, I could stay here all day tell you about how much
of the percentage cost. Yeah, what percentage, just off the top of your head, of the whole bridge project is regulation?
Oh, 20-25%.
Is it really?
Maybe more.
Is it really?
Because remember, one of the requirements is if we build something new, we've got to build it up to this new, mm-hmm. very high standard, mm-hmm. okay? Well, that's not required by the statute. That's required by the regulatory activity of the Federal Highway Administration. Well, if they'll work with us, you know, work with us, help us re-engineer this thing, and if we have to have, you know, a waiver or something from you, give it to us so we can build this bridge. It's in the national interest to build this bridge.
I agree. But that's interesting. I mean, that, in putting that to numbers, that out of this, you know, because it kept growing and growing and growing in cost, and I always picture, you know, pilings and people working in rebar and those kind of things. But
that's a part of it.
Obviously, you know, but to know that the regulatory cost could be that much.
Well, if I can redesign it to where I don't have to build to level, I'm going to build a
cheap
bridge.
That's less rebar, less concrete,
No such thing as a cheap bridge. Remember, the bridge itself, not the spans across the bay, but the bridge itself is going to be the second tallest bridge across navigable water in America, behind the Golden Gate Bridge. So this is a big project. And everybody in America has an interest in getting that kink in the I-10 system fixed.
Yeah, well, I agree. Make sure Washington knows that.
I'd say,
hey, your regulation is keeping us from making this happen. We sure would like to make this happen, but y'all messed it up.
I think you can be assured that many, many people have been up in Washington talking about that.
Very good. Always good to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Good to be here.
And more of these job fairs and results like that, I want to hear about them. That's great things.
Maybe the next time I come in, I'll bring a student with me.
You know what? I would love that.
I'm going to find out.
I would love that, because the flip side, too, I've been thinking about is to take people that were those students that got those jobs and now have a new truck or the boat or take and have them come talk to the kids.
19-year-old making $30 an hour.
Yeah. Say, hey, man, I was you 2 years ago. Here's what I'm making. Here's what you know, took the girlfriend. We went, you know, we got a house down in Carabelle for the weekend or whatever it is, you know.
Let them talk the job.
Real people stuff. Always great. Thank you.
Good to see you.
Paul Feinbaum next.